Good evening. Venerable Chodron was doing a webinar this afternoon for Jewel Heart Dharma Center in Cleveland, and so she asked me to fill in tonight. And so we're going to do exercise 12.1 on page, is it 224? 245. Yeah, 245. Thank you. And so first of all, let's begin with our motivation. Here at the Abbey, we've been observing our minds and reflecting on our past karmas, calling to mind all of the non-virtues that we can think of and imagining the ones we can't remember, and really engaging in some heartfelt purification practice. And I don't know about your mind, but occasionally my mind will get caught on something, either a memory or something that's currently going on. And it's fascinating just to observe how tenacious the mind can grab onto an object and hold to it with inappropriate or distorted attention. And so one of the techniques that I have found helpful for working with those kinds of minds, whether it's attachment or aversion or some kind of arrogance or jealousy, whatever it is to just stop and ask myself, well, who is experiencing this? Who is experiencing this right now? And so I go through the aggregates. I ask, does my skin have a problem with this? It might sound silly, but it works. Does my skin have a problem with this person or this situation? And of course it doesn't, it's just skin. Okay, well, how about my muscles or my bones? And again, it's, you know, it feels kind of silly asking the question, but it can be very effective. Well, my body, nothing in my body has a problem with this situation or this person. Not my heart, not my liver, not my intestines, although they may be affected. So then I start looking in my mind. Okay, well, which kind of mind is having a problem with this person or this situation? And so I go through the different primary consciousnesses. Is it the I consciousness that has a problem with this? No, it's never the I consciousness. I consciousness just knows shape and color. It doesn't have much preference for this person or that person, this situation, that situation. So it's not the I consciousness. And I go through all of them. It's not the ear consciousness. It's not the nose or the taste consciousness, the tactile consciousness. And then I get to the mental consciousness and I think, okay, here, maybe it's here. And so then I investigate, well, is it every moment of mental consciousness that's having a problem with this person or this situation? Is the mental consciousness that has some semblance of loving kindness having a problem with this person? Definitely not. Faith or generosity, any of those mental consciousnesses having a problem right now? No. Invariably, what I come to is it's a moment of self-grasping ignorance that, or maybe a series of self-grasping ignorance that have a hold of my mind, that is exaggerating the sense of self. And then based on that, of course, there are afflictions and negative mental actions happening. And so when I can identify, when I can really narrow it down, it's just a small portion of the primary mental consciousness that's really grasping onto this object and seeing this as a big problem, then I can sort of turn to it and laugh at it. And it gets shy. And it kind of shrinks away and disappears, at least for the moment. And so I just offer that as something that might be of benefit. And really, it ties into what we're doing here in understanding, studying collected topics and looking in debate, trying to understand what is this mind and what are the objects that it's engaging. And how is it that we, these two things, minds and objects, come together and create our reality, create our experiences? And so again tonight, as we go through the review and we're looking at different consciousnesses, these seven particular consciousnesses identified by Dan Perdue in this text, and noticing how they are able to engage with different objects. We're doing that so that we can unravel this mysterious thing we call samsara, so that we can actually bring peace to our minds, real peace, lasting peace, not only to our own minds, but we're doing this so that we can increase our potential to be of greater and greater benefit to all the other living beings who are constructed just like us. Okay, so tonight, because this will be a very interactive session, and so I'm just going to ask you to scoot a little bit closer so that we can quickly pass the microphone. Is that okay? Just scoot in a little bit. If you're planning to speak, then come in a little bit closer. And this afternoon, I put together a chart of these seven types of awareness. So here we are at the end of chapter 12. And now we're going to be tested on what we've learned. And tonight, when we go through these comparisons, this chapter was on consciousnesses in relation to what they perceive. And so as we go through the comparisons, then we can draw also on what we learned in chapter 11 on the paradigms for proving a comparison of phenomena, just to so that we understand, well, what are the reasons that we're basing our answers on? So when we compare two things, we're checking to see, is there something that's both of each of the items we're comparing, is there something that is one but not the other, the other but not the one, and then is there something that's neither? So, of course, some of these things we've been studying for a while, and we have some definitions. Let's see if we have definitions in our mind. So if you're relatively new to this, then you'll find a lot of these answers. Just look them up in the back in the index if you want to follow up later on. So the first one, sense consciousness and mental consciousness, how do those two compare? Mutually exclusive. Okay. And why are they mutually exclusive?
Because they are phenomena that are diverse. And whatever is a sense consciousness is necessarily not a mental consciousness, because whatever is a sense consciousness is necessarily not a knower that is produced independent of wholeness, own uncommon empowering condition, a mental sense power. But whatever is a mental sense consciousness necessarily is a knower that is produced independent of wholeness, own uncommon empowering condition, a mental sense power.
Good. Excellent. Good way to answer. Okay. So she's drawing on the definitions there to prove her point. Okay. All right. The second one is, how do the two compare, mental consciousness and conceptual consciousness? So one of the things that we've learned, one of the things that we've talked about, is that it's important to really understand each of the two things that we're comparing. So if we talk about a mental consciousness, What would be some of the instances that would be included under mental consciousness? What would we find? Conceptual consciousnesses. What else? Mental direct perceivers. Yogic direct perceivers. Correctly assuming consciousness. Yep. Okay, so there's quite a few things that are included under mental consciousness. And then what's included under conceptual consciousness? Any thought consciousness. So any consciousness that's relying on a conceptual appearance, to get at its appearing object, or its appearing object is a conceptual appearance. Okay, so then how do those two compare? Do you have clearer images in your mind if we talk about mental consciousness and what that includes? So it's mental consciousness is not only a conceptual consciousness, is it? Because it includes some non-conceptual consciousnesses like mental direct perceivers. Okay, so how do the two compare? Three possibilities. Okay, Venerable Losong, go for it.
There are three possibilities between mental consciousness and conceptual consciousness. So something that is both a mental consciousness and a conceptual consciousness is the subject, a consciousness wondering about tomorrow's weather. And the subject of consciousness wondering about tomorrow's weather is a mental consciousness because of being a knower that is produced in dependence upon its own empowering, own uncommon empowering condition, a mental sense power. And it is a conceptual consciousness because of being a determinate knower that apprehends the sound generality and meaning generality is suitable to be mixed. Or as you said, it relies upon a conceptual appearance to get at its object.
Yeah. Okay. And then which way does the pervasion go?
So whatever is a conceptual consciousness is necessarily a mental consciousness, but it is not the case that whatever is a mental consciousness is necessarily a conceptual consciousness. So an example of that would be the subject, a mental direct perceiver apprehending blue at the end of a continuum of a visual direct perceiver apprehending blue.
Okay.
So that one little brief half second or whatever.
All right.
And that is a mental consciousness because of being a knower that is produced upon a sense dependence of, that a knower that is produced independence upon a sense power.
It's on uncommon empowering condition.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's not a conceptual consciousness because
it's a direct perceiver and is thus free from conceptuality.
Good. Yeah, that's a nice way to answer it.
Yeah.
So there are a number of ways that he could have answered that, right? You could use the definition or the opposite of the definition of, you could use a, yeah, it's not a, let's see, it's not a conceptual consciousness because it doesn't fulfill the definition of a conceptual consciousness, or as you said, because it's a direct perceiver, which is necessarily free of conceptuality.
Which makes it not fulfill the other definition.
Yeah.
And I found that you only have to show that it doesn't fulfill the definition is easy because sometimes a definition has many components, and if it doesn't fulfill even one of them, then there you are.
Okay.
And did you want something that is neither?
Of course.
The subject, a visual direct perceiver apprehending clouds is not a mental consciousness because of not being produced in dependence upon a mental sense power.
Okay.
And it's not a conceptual consciousness because of being a direct perceiver and thus free from conceptuality.
All right. Very good. Yeah, good job. Okay. Now, we're going to put together the information that we just learned in these first two comparisons with this third one. So how do these two compare? A sense consciousness and a... Oh, no, that comes later. Okay, how do these two compare? A sense consciousness and a conceptual consciousness.
I even just now, I had even what you're supposed to say, and I totally spaced. They're mutually exclusive because a sense consciousness necessarily apprehends... is a sense direct perceiver, you know? And the conceptual consciousness apprehends its objects through a meaning generality or a conceptual appearance.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
The subject sense consciousness and the subject conceptual consciousness are mutually exclusive. the subject sense consciousness and the subject conceptual consciousness are different because of being phenomena that are diverse. Whatever is a sense consciousness is not necessarily a conceptual consciousness, because whatever is a sense consciousness is not a knower produced in dependence on its own uncommon power condition, a mental sense faculty, but whatever is a conceptual consciousness. I have the wording here backwards. But whatever, I'm a little confused now. But whatever is a sense consciousness is not necessarily a mental,
it's not necessarily a conceptual consciousness,
because whatever is a mental sense consciousness. Which way does the syllogism go?
Well, we don't have a syllogism, but sense consciousness pervades. I mean, no, it doesn't pervade because they're mutually exclusive. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, right, there we go. So, okay, if we look at number one, we were looking at a sense consciousness and a mental consciousness. And then in the second one, we were taking what we learned about mental consciousness and compared that to conceptual consciousness. And then we put the two together here, sense consciousness and conceptual consciousness. So because conceptual consciousness is a subset of mental consciousness, then hopefully that appears more quickly to the mind. If something is a subset of a larger category, then the same sort of relationship is going to ensue. Does that make sense? Okay. If we were drawing these, it might be easier. Is that... Okay. Let me know if you want me to write them on the board. Pictures are good. So anyway... That is the more formal way to answer it, the way Im did, but also the way you did it gets at it has all the components there that you need to know. Okay. So actually, if we go back to that answer that Im gave, phenomena that are diverse, actually that's true of every kind of comparison that we're looking at. So I'm not sure why it's particularly brought up when looking at mutually exclusive things, but and then we go on to say whatever is one is necessarily not the other, and whatever is the other is necessarily not the one. That way we know that they're mutually exclusive. They're not a subset. And similarly, while we're waiting for the whiteboard, if we find that two things are mutually inclusive, like for instance, product and impermanent, those two things, although they have different connotations, they do get to the same thing. And so if we were to compare them, then we'd say that the two are diverse, or they are diverse phenomena, and whatever is one is necessarily the other, and whatever is the other is necessarily one, or they share the eight doors of pervasion. We can say it either way. So the next one is comparing consciousness and direct perceivers. All right, so let's use the whiteboard now that we have it. So consciousness is the big category, isn't it? It includes all types of minds. Consciousness and direct perceiver. Thank you. Okay, so if we... I'm hoping that by now this would be pretty obvious to people, that if consciousness is the bigger category and all seven types of these awarenesses, or all main minds and all mentor factors are included within consciousness, that whatever we compared that with, it would be 3P. Consciousness would be this larger category, right? And then whatever we're comparing it with would be the smaller, it would be an instance, so it's a subset. So it's going to look like this kind of relationship. Okay, but if we were to talk about consciousness, let's say we didn't know about consciousness and we just happened to read chapter 12 of Dan Perdue's book and we thought, okay, well, consciousness must include various things. How can we break down consciousness? I just said a couple of them, but there are other ways, aren't there? Conceptual and non-conceptual. So what are some other ways? Non-conceptual. Sense and mental. Mistaken and non-mistaken. Actually, these are pairs, aren't they? Reliable, non-reliable. Yep. Yeah. Good. We have main minds and mental factors. And then, well, it's not a dichotomy, but the seven types, right? Seven types of consciousness. Okay, so then we could list all seven. And one of them would be direct perceiver. So when we do something like this visually, and we write out all these seven types of consciousness, and we see that, oh, one is a direct perceiver, then, well, we see that, well, that's going to be a subset. So these kind of visual clues, and that's why I've done the chart, these kind of visual clues can be really helpful in seeing the relationships. So it does help. If you don't clearly understand what these two things are that you're comparing, just write out what you know about them. Write out the instances, and then that'll help to make it more apparent. Okay, so who'd like to go through this one? Yeah, Venerable Tarpa. Something that's both consciousness and direct perceiver?
The subject of visual consciousness apprehending a vase.
You have to use lots of shorthand. Okay, and something that is a consciousness, one but not two, a consciousness but not a direct perceiver?
Let's see. Something as a consciousness but not a direct perceiver. I didn't do it that way. I went through the proof the way it was written.
Oh, okay. Yes, that's right. Okay, how does the pervasion go?
Okay, so
which way does the pervasion go?
I just did it the way it's done in the book.
Good, that's good.
So there's three possibilities between direct perceivers and consciousness.
Okay.
Something as both is what I just said.
Yep.
And the visual consciousness apprehending a vase is a direct perceiver, because it's a non-mistaken knower free from conceptuality.
Yep.
And the visual consciousness apprehending a vase is a consciousness, because it's the being that which is clear and knowing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first one.
Good.
And then whatever's a direct perceiver is necessarily a consciousness. But whatever is a consciousness is not necessarily a direct perceiver. And then the example is the subject of conceptual consciousness thinking about a vase. It's a consciousness, but it's not a direct perceiver.
Okay. Thinking a vase. Good.
So the conceptual consciousness thinking about a vase is a consciousness, because it's something that's clear and knowing.
Mm-hmm.
And the conceptual consciousness thinking about a vase is not a direct perceiver, because it's not free from conceptuality. Mm-hmm. It's also mistaken in that it's relying on a conceptual appearance.
Yeah, so that gets both aspects of the definition of a direct perceiver. Okay.
And the third part is something that's neither a direct perceiver nor a consciousness is the subject, an I sense power or sense faculty.
Okay. Go ahead.
So the I sense faculty is not a direct perceiver, because it's not a knower.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a consciousness, because it's a form.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they're different groups. I mean, you could say, I don't agree, but then you're going to get into trouble, because
they're
forms
indeed.
And because impermanent phenomena, the way we divide it, forms consciousness. So it's not a consciousness, it's a form.
Yeah.
So it can't be a consciousness.
Yep. Good. Okay, and just to highlight, when we're doing these three possibilities, there's going to be one of the possibilities that there isn't any example. Yeah, Em?
For this comparison, for something that is both, would the subject, a self-knowing consciousness apprehending the visual consciousness apprehending a cup, work?
Em?
What?
You have too much spare time on your hands. All right, say it again.
It's a direct person.
Say it again. A self-knowing. Go ahead.
A self-knowing consciousness apprehending the visual consciousness apprehending a cup, or a vase,
yeah,
in this case.
Well, a self-knower is a direct perceiver.
Yeah,
isn't
for the
it?
Both category, yeah.
Yeah. So it fits the definition of a direct perceiver, and everything that's a direct perceiver is a consciousness. So it would Any direct perceiver is going to be a consciousness.
Yeah. Okay.
We just haven't talked about self-knowers. That's why I was giving you a hard time.
And then it's like the subject of self-knowing consciousness, apprehending of the visual consciousness, apprehending of vase, is the direct perceiver because it's the non-mistaken knower free from conceptuality.
That's the definition of a direct perceiver.
Thank you.
Good. Yes.
On self-knowers.
Are we on self-knowers?
So we might not know, but I can't remember this. If a self-knower was, well, they're all direct perceivers, so it wouldn't know a conceptual consciousness?
No, it would still know a conceptual consciousness.
A direct perceiver knowing a conceptual consciousness. Okay.
Yeah, it's knowing the mental consciousness directly, non-dually, actually.
Yeah.
So
that's strange.
It knows all. Yeah, it is.
Okay.
It's strange and it's not correct. So that's why Venerable doesn't teach it.
Geshe Wangmo, though, when she taught the Brahma of Artika in the first or second quarter, because she went through the debate stuff, and they had to like take it on. You know?
Yeah.
It was kind of cool the way she talked about it, in that it was just kind of more like, well, how do you know? I was asking a really good question.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of nice that way to think about it.
Yeah.
And then it's good later to throw it out, but yeah, it was interesting.
The Sutra school following reasoning, the mind-only school, and the yogic middle way autonomist all assert a self-knower in the tenet systems. And they do that for a number of reasons. Primarily with the lower schools, it's because they say for something to be an existent, it has to be known by a consciousness, right? It has to be known by a direct perceiver. Hello. And so they're asking, well, what is it that knows a consciousness? And it's an interesting question. Yeah. How do you know you know? Yeah. And from the consequence point of view, they say there's a mutual dependence in between an object and the consciousness knowing that object. And so just because of that mutual dependence, you wouldn't have an object without a consciousness that knows it. And you wouldn't have a consciousness knowing an object if the object didn't exist. So they mutually support each other to be existent.
Because things truly exist. They can have the substantially existent thing over here and the consciousness over there, so they need something to bridge it. But because in the Prasangika, that doesn't work anyway. They need to have these things in relationship with each other.
Yeah.
Like what you said, it couldn't be.
Right. There are also other problems with that. Like if you had a self-knower that understood the conceptual consciousness thinking of vase, well, what knows that self-knower? You'd need another self-knower, wouldn't you, to know? Yeah, so there's an infinite regress. That's another.
It has to be something about with inherent existence, too, comes up. I remember Geshe Dorje Dango explained that to us.
Okay.
Somehow inherent existence comes into it, and it sort of gets thrown out.
I don't know. I can't think of what you're thinking of now. But another difficulty that comes up is that a self-knower is necessarily a mental consciousness, and so it's arising independence, or it's arising together with whatever consciousness, like a sense consciousness. And the sense consciousness relies on its own uncommon empowering condition. And so then you have to ask, well, what's the uncommon empowering condition of the mental consciousness, the self-knower, and does that, the sense consciousness is the cause for the self-knower, and they arise at the same time. That's another problem. So it's fraught with difficulties, and, that a lot of the things in tenets are fraught with difficulties, but, we study them anyway. So, okay, that was a little digression, but.
Em is speaking from the school that the debate system is right. Written in.
Sutra school following reasoning does assert self-knowers. Okay, good. Thank you for that. So we're up to number five. So number five is going to be a little similar, isn't it? All right. So instead of, sense consciousness and direct perceivers. Okay, so now we're narrowing down. We don't have such a big field. Instead of consciousness, we have sense consciousness. And I heard some four P's. All right, who'd like to go with it? Okay. All right, Venerable Tarpa, go ahead.
And the homework from the previous time.
Okay, so you're saying there's four possibilities. When we say 4P, that means four possibilities. Okay. That means all four of these will have an answer to them or have a subject, an instance.
So there are four possibilities.
With or without a neither.
With something that is neither.
Okay.
And this is between direct perceivers and sense consciousnesses. Mm-hmm. So something that's both a direct perceiver and a sense consciousness is a subject, an eye consciousness seeing the Statue of Liberty in the New York Harbor.
Okay.
So the eye consciousness seeing the Statue of Liberty in the New York Harbor is a direct perceiver because it's a non-mistaken knower that's free from conceptuality. Mm-hmm. And it is a sense consciousness because it's an awareness which arises in dependence on its own uncommon empowering condition.
Okay. The definition we were using was slightly different, but it's
physical sense power.
Well, it's a knower produced independence upon an uncommon empowering condition of physical sense power.
Say that again. Sense consciousness, we didn't have a definition in the book, so I got it from Jeffrey.
Okay.
I made up
there
one.
There
was a definition.
I couldn't find it anyway. I took it from.
Okay. Yeah, said awareness, knower, those are synonymous.
Awareness arises independence upon its own empowering.
Uncommon empowering condition.
Uncommon empowering condition, a physical sense power.
Okay. Good.
I first used debate book to find this. I mean, not debate, but our textbook to find it, and I didn't actually find the definition. But
okay,
what I did
everybody
find
look.
Is that
can you find what page? No, it's in the back.
Page 49.
481. In the definitions, we have. Okay. Sense consciousness, a knower that is produced independent upon its own uncommon empowering condition of physical sense power. Now, the point that M was bringing up is that we could have included, because we're talking about a visual consciousness, then we could even use the definition of a visual consciousness, but actually we're just trying to prove it's a sense consciousness. So that's not necessary to include the part about its observed object condition, a form. Visual form, thank you.
Yes,
she's
that
good.
Would be too narrow. I mean, you couldn't use that.
What's that?
You couldn't use that. I don't think, because you wouldn't be proving a sense consciousness, then you'd be proving an eye consciousness.
Well, but an eye consciousness is a sense consciousness.
Right,
so. Okay, I take your point.
I tried to do that at first, and I thought that won't work.
Yeah.
Because what do you do with the other ones then? Now you've left out the other sense consciousnesses if you narrow it down by proving it that way. To say that this is a sense consciousness because it's an eye consciousness?
Because it's a visual consciousness produced independence upon its own uncommon empowering condition, a eye sense power. What were we using? Faculty or power?
That proves it's an eye consciousness. It doesn't prove it's a sense consciousness to me. I don't know. I couldn't get that to work.
Okay.
I see what you're saying, but it didn't quite make sense to me to do that. It seemed like
you can do it either way. I think you can do it either way.
Okay.
And the way you're talking about is using the definition of a sense consciousness because that's the broader category,
right.
And then you understand more about that category.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good. Okay.
Okay.
And then something that's a sense consciousness but not a direct perceiver? If you look at your chart,
I'm doing
this
the second
help.
One. So one that is a direct perceiver but not a sense consciousness.
Okay, we can start there.
Is a yogic direct perceiver of subtle impermanence.
Okay.
So the subject, a yogic direct perceiver of subtle impermanence, is a direct perceiver but not a sense consciousness. It's a direct perceiver because it's a non-mistaken knower that's free from conceptuality.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a sense consciousness because it's a mental consciousness.
Mm-hmm. You can be that succinct. Yep. It's not a sense consciousness because it's a mental consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then the third, something that's a sense consciousness but not a direct perceiver, is a visual consciousness, seeing two moons when looking at the Earth's moon.
Okay. So an erroneous visual consciousness, seeing two moons.
So this visual consciousness, seeing two moons when looking at the Earth's moon, is a sense consciousness. Because it's an awareness that arises and depends on its own uncommon empowering condition of physical sense power.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a direct perceiver because of being mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Because direct perceivers aren't mistaken.
Yes.
And something that is neither is a dream consciousness. If you take, right. A dream consciousness.
How do you feel about that?
To which appears a white cloud in a blue sky. It's not a direct perceiver because it's a wrong consciousness. And I got this actually partly from mine in Tibetan Buddhism, because they give an example of a wrong mental consciousness, a dream consciousness to which blue clearly appears.
Yeah. It's a
wrong mental consciousness.
And that's given as a mental consciousness.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
So it's a wrong consciousness, so it can't be a direct perceiver. That's why it's not a direct perceiver, because it's a wrong consciousness.
Yeah.
And then it's this dream consciousness to which appears a white cloud in a blue sky is not a sense consciousness because it's a mental consciousness.
Yes. Okay, good. Now, there is some debate about dream consciousnesses, so we could...
Is that some people think they're conceptual. They don't think they're sense.
Okay. They're debate, all mental, but some are conceptual.
Tsongkhapa, it's actually in mind, mm-hmm. Tibetan Buddhism. Good, thank you. Tsongkhapa thinks some of them could be conceptual, but most people think...
Okay, I mean, we come back to...
Most people think they are conceptual, but he thinks some of them aren't. I think that's how it went. You'd have to look it up.
Okay, so again, when we look at mental consciousness, there are conceptual mental consciousness and non-conceptual mental consciousness. Doesn't that kind of do your head in? Like, shouldn't they all be conceptual? But they're actually not. Okay. So if we broke down direct perceivers, what we'd find is there are sense direct perceivers, and then there are three types of mental direct perceivers. So there's kind of the plain, generic mental direct perceivers that come at the end of a sense series of sense consciousness. And then there's also self-knower and yogic direct perceivers, which are non-conceptual.
So if you had a mental consciousness right at the end of a series of visual consciousness, and the visual consciousness was mistaken, such as seeing two moons, then you would have a non-conceptual mistaken mental consciousness, huh? And it wouldn't be a direct perceiver.
Yeah. Right, good.
Okay.
This is...
Even if it's conceptual, non-conceptual, doesn't mean it could still be wrong. Even a mental consciousness.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I knew that with sense consciousnesses there could be that, but I hadn't thought about there being a mental, non-conceptual consciousness and still being wrong.
Examples I've seen where it talks about sense consciousnesses that are not direct perceivers. It's because they're mistaken. Are there any others other than because they're mistaken? Is there some other thing that's a sense conscious that's not a direct perceiver and is unmistaken?
There's always some type of, well, I mean, put your sutra hat on and leave it on. Okay, now say your question one more time, because I'm...
The examples of sense consciousness that are not direct perceivers,
mm-hmm.
that I've seen so far, heard so far, mm-hmm. has always been because they're mistaken.
Yes.
Is there anything that would be a sense conscious, not a direct perceiver, and also unmistaken?
If we're talking primarily about these seven types of awareness, I can't say definitively about all awarenesses, but if we look at the seven types of awareness and you think about that chart, there's one place where wrong consciousnesses, they are mistaken, but they are non-conceptual. That's the only one I can think of. That's the only example I can think of. And they can be mistaken in different ways, as Venerable Tarpa was suggesting, you know, in terms of the fault in the sentence faculty or immediately preceding condition, like really strong anger, you might see things distorted in a certain way. Imagine. Yeah.
We're in the box of belief and knowing, within the box of belief and knowing, then anything that's a sense consciousness that's not a direct perceiver is going to be mistaken.
Yes.
Got it.
Yeah. Did you want to add something?
If we were looking at the presentation of the full seven, then you'd have subsequent cognizers of sense consciousnesses.
Mm-hmm.
That would be not mistaken as well. So you'd have direct and subsequent.
Yeah. Yeah, and awareness is to which an object appears, but it's not ascertained. There's sense consciousness there too, but they're direct perceivers. Yeah. Yeah. M.
Just a small clarification.
Thank you.
Up on the board where it says two but not one, yogic direct perception of subtle impermanence. Is that the correct way of saying it, or do you have to use realizing subtle impermanence or like apprehending subtle impermanence? Is there a
that was just
way?
Shortcut.
Just shortcut.
It was just me writing quickly.
What's
yeah.
the correct way to posit that subtle?
Well, a yogic direct perceiver is necessarily realizing.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. It's an object. It's a union of calm abiding and special insight, so necessarily there's... Yeah. Okay, good. Thank you. Thank you, Venerable Tarpa. All right, what's the next one? Number six, mental consciousness. All right, well, that's kind of similar. Shall we go to the next one? Consciousness and valid cognizers. Okay, that's... Valid, what's the other term Venerable uses? Reliable cognizer. Hey, I have two erasers. How did that happen? I'm rich. Reliable cognizer. Okay, so who'd like to have a go at this? Someone who hasn't done one yet? All right. I'll prompt you if you need. How many possibilities between those two?
It is 3P.
3P, good. Yes. Okay. What's something that's both?
A direct perceiver apprehending blue.
Okay, so we say the subject, a direct perceiver, subject,
yes.
Apprehending blue. So you could say direct perceiver, or you could say visual consciousness. Visual either way, consciousness. Direct perceiver apprehending. Well, it leaves a it make. I mean, you could apprehend blue with a mental consciousness too, couldn't you? So maybe it's better to say a visual consciousness, or visual. Did you want to use a mental consciousness?
A visual consciousness. Okay.
A visual consciousness apprehending blue. Okay. And so that is a consciousness because?
Because it is, I don't know the definitions well off the top of my head.
Okay. No, it just has to be a consciousness. It's a consciousness because?
Which is clear and knowing. Is that enough?
Yes, that is. And it's a reliable cognizer because?
Because it's a new incontrovertible knower.
Excellent. Okay. Now you said 3P, so which way does the privation go?
Consciousness pervades the
Yes, the consciousness is the larger category. Yes. Pervades reliable cognizers. So what we say is whatever is a reliable cognizer is necessarily a consciousness, but whatever is a consciousness is not necessarily a reliable cognizer. And then you give an instance of something that is a consciousness that's not a reliable cognizer.
A mistaken consciousness apprehending one moon as two.
Okay. All right. So that mistaken consciousness apprehending one moon as two is a consciousness because?
Because that is, it's not clear in knowing.
But well, actually it is. It is? It's erroneous, okay. But it's still clear in knowing. Okay. It clearly knows two moons.
Okay.
Isn't that funny?
That aspect, okay.
Yeah. Okay, and that mistaken consciousness apprehending one moon as two is not a reliable cognizer because?
Because it is not a new incontrovertible knower.
Yeah, it's not a new incontrovertible knower. Because it's a mistaken consciousness or because it's a wrong consciousness. Yeah. The difference between a mistaken consciousness and a wrong consciousness is that a wrong we'll come to that. Okay. Now, is there anything that is a reliable cognizer that's not a consciousness?
No.
There isn't anything. Okay. And then can you think of something that is neither a consciousness nor a reliable cognizer?
No. It's neither a consciousness or form.
I love it. Good. You could just see the new neural pathway getting connected. Good job. You haven't been following these teachings, so that's really excellent. Okay. Yes.
Yeah, I just don't use the right page in the book. But so he worded all these questions with valid cognizer. And then where do you get a new and incontrovertible knower as the definition? Because in the book, I have it digitally, and I searched through valid cognizer. It's pramana. But he, in this book, used prime cognizer. And that was the definition of a prime cognizer, I thought. Never
Let's have a look.
Gave a definition that I found. It's at the end of the book.
Yeah. Valid cognizer is mentioned on a number of pages, but
right.
It's nice when they say definition. It doesn't
here.
483.
Okay, so it's all in that chart in the back, and he calls it a valid cognizer there. But earlier in the that's the same definition he has for a prime cognizer, though.
Yeah. For the Sutra School, prime right. And valid are getting at the same thing.
But it's so funny to me. Thank you.
It has to do... Yeah. Each term should have its own unique definition.
So in regard to valid cognizers, the second definition Purdue posits is a knower that is incontrovertible with regard to its main object. But I thought the Sutra School made a big deal about things being new. And new is not included necessarily in that definition.
Yeah, it is interesting. They do make a big deal about something being new. I don't fully understand that yet. Has anybody heard a reason why that's the case? So it is interesting that he's left it out of that. And is that a second definition for a reliable cognizer?
There's two definitions.
Read it again, please.
So the first definition is a new incontrovertible knower.
Yeah, or a new non-deceptive knower, as Venerable
and
translates.
The second definition is a knower that is incontrovertible with regard to its main object.
Yeah, so that would include subsequent cognizers, wouldn't it? Yeah. Use your microphone. Well, hopefully this is all presented from the Sutra School following reasoning point of view. But, you know, I mean, we found some errors before. So somebody please write this down and I'll add it to my list of things that don't add up. Okay? And we can't debate Dan Purdue because he's not here anymore. But we can certainly write to the authors or the publishers. Okay. Good job, Sam. Thank you very much. Okay, what's the next one? And reliable cognizer. RC, is that going to be okay for people? You just know that that reliable cognizer is RC? Okay. So what do you think? Sense consciousness and reliable cognizer. Who wants to have a go? All right, Christina. Okay, let's have a, let's see.
Something that's both is visual consciousness,
the
apprehending
subject?
The subject.
Visual consciousness,
apprehending the whiteboard as white.
Okay.
Something that's a sense.
Wait. It's a sense consciousness because?
It's a sense consciousness because it's produced on, it's produced in dependence upon its own uncommon empowering condition, a sense faculty.
A physical sense faculty.
A physical sense faculty.
Yeah. Okay. And it's a reliable cognizer because?
Because it correctly apprehends its object. Did we just go over this definition?
We did. Reliable cognizer, new
it's,
incontrovertible
it's new
knower.
Incontrovertible knower.
You know, this is just coming to my mind now. I wonder, you know, to be 100% correct, I wonder if you'd have to say visual consciousness newly apprehending whiteboard. Because visual consciousness apprehending whiteboard could be first moment, second moment, third moment. So, I don't know. Let's just put it in brackets for now. I'll follow up on that. I've never heard it said that way. I've heard examples. Thank you. Yeah, first moment. That's how we do it. Okay, first moment. Okay. Yeah, that's how it is in the lower text. It comes back to me now. Okay. And what's something that is a... Let's see, what's something that is sense consciousness but not a reliable cognizer?
The subject, tactile consciousness, apprehending sandpaper as smooth.
Okay, that person is confused, but... It
fresh.
Could be old sandpaper.
Fresh sand.
Okay. Okay, so it's a sense consciousness because?
It's produced in dependence upon its own uncommon empowering condition of physical sense faculty.
Good. And it's not a reliable cognizer because?
It is a controvertible knower. It's mistaken.
It's mistaken. It's also wrong, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's a wrong consciousness.
It's a wrong consciousness.
Yeah. Okay. And then what's something that's a reliable cognizer that's not a sense consciousness?
An inferential cognition of the selflessness of persons.
Okay. Realizing selflessness of
realizing.
Yeah, we have to do the first moment. Selflessness. Well, if we... Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's implied, but just to be super clear, we can add first moment of inferential cognition. Because there is a second moment. You could say there is a second moment of an inferential cognition. It's a subsequent cognition, but it is the second moment of that inferential cognition. Well, it's no longer an inferential cognition, is it? Because it's not relying on a sign. But it is the second moment of that continuum of mental consciousness. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, it's a little bit redundant when we're talking about. Okay. Yep.
So it's a reliable cognizer because it's a new incontrovertible knower.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a sense, it's not a sense consciousness because it is a mental consciousness.
Good. Yeah, I'm glad you went outside the box and went over to the inferential cognition. Good job. And something that's neither?
A dream consciousness.
Okay. Yeah. A dream consciousness is not a sense consciousness because?
It is a mental consciousness.
Uh-huh. And it's not a reliable cognizer because?
It is a wrong consciousness.
Good. Excellent. Okay. Any questions about that? Yes.
So people have been saying mistaken a lot, and something can be mistaken and be reliable, right?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
So how many possibilities? We need to
say wrong consciousness, not mistaken consciousness.
Well, yeah, I think you can say it's mistaken with regard to its appearing object and also mistaken with regard to its engaged object. However, that makes it a wrong consciousness.
That makes it a wrong consciousness.
So, yeah.
Otherwise, every consciousness of an ordinary being is going to be mistaken, right?
From the middle way consequence point of view.
Oh, but not from the...
No, not put your sutra hat back on.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, dream consciousness, because it appears as if in the dream, the dream elephant or the dream whatever, dream ice cream, seems real and it's not real. So it's a wrong consciousness.
Wrong consciousnesses or mistaken consciousnesses?
They're wrong consciousnesses.
They're wrong consciousnesses?
They're wrong. They are wrongly engaging their object. In the dream, mostly in our dreams, we think that is a real whatever, tiger, dragon, teacher, whatever you're dreaming of. Yeah.
If you're lucid dreaming and you know that you're...
Well, I don't know about lucid dreaming, okay? We're just talking about normal dreams. Yeah. You find that answer and you come back and tell us, okay? All right, we're whipping right through these. Yes, okay. May all beings realize the dreamlike nature of things. Okay, where are we? Mental? How about number 10? Number 9 is just like number 8. Okay, number 10, direct perceivers and wrong consciousnesses. Are you sure? Okay. Give her a microphone. She's going to... On page 241. What does it say on page 241? You're not supposed to be cheating. Okay. Okay. All right. So a direct perceiver and a wrong consciousness are mutually exclusive because...
No, that are diverse. What am I looking at here?
Direct perceivers and wrong consciousness.
Because direct perceivers, I'm going to tell you in the unorthodox way, okay. Direct perceivers correctly apprehend their objects and wrong consciousnesses are mistaken with regard to their and their engaged objects.
Yes. So if we were to look at the chart I've passed out a chart on the 7 awarenesses, and is there a way we can post that online? Okay, good. So if we just in general, you know, if we look at the 7 types of awareness, you know, there are mistaken over here on the left, and that's everything from inferential cognition to correct assumption, to doubt and wrong consciousness. All of these are mistaken. Okay, this one goes a little bit like this. Okay. All of these are mistaken because they get at their object through the medium of a generic image, a conceptual appearance. So for the Sutra school, that necessarily makes them mistaken with regard to that appearing object, how it appears. They could be correct in what they're understanding about the object, like the inferential cognition. Direct perceivers are over here, aren't they? Direct perceivers are non-conceptual, and they're non-mistaken, and so never the two shall meet, right? They're on opposite sides of a chart. Okay, so watch for that coming attraction. All right, what's the next one? Oh, good. What is it? Thought consciousness. And correct consciousness.
Yep.
Okay. So let's review. What is a thought consciousness? What's included? Conceptual consciousness. Is anything else under thought consciousness? No. It's just conceptual consciousnesses. And what about correct consciousness? What is that synonymous with, or what is that pointing to? What does that mean? Reliable. It's synonymous with reliable, isn't it? And we know there are two types. How many types of reliable consciousnesses? Inferential, and direct perceiver. Actually, yeah, to be really correct, we'd have to say direct reliable perceiver. But anyway, since we're not talking about subsequent consciousnesses, that's what we have. Okay, so how many possibilities? Four. Why don't you do it? You have a microphone. How handy. 4P. Something that's both.
The subject, a inferential realization of the selflessness of persons.
Of selflessness of person? Snop. Okay.
It's a thought consciousness because it gets at its object through a conceptual appearance.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a correct consciousness because it is a new incontrovertible knower.
Yeah. You could say it's a new incontrovertible knower. You could also say because it correctly engages its object.
Would you have to turn it to specify incontrovertibly?
Non-deceptively.
Because a correct assumption correctly engages its object, doesn't it?
No. Remember? We said that it's not a correct consciousness because it's not non-deceptive.
That's what I'm saying. That a correct assumption correctly knows its object, but it doesn't do so incontrovertibly. So you have to specify with correct consciousness that it does so incontrovertibly.
Let's just look at for a moment, correct assumption. Let's look at that definition. It does say correct in the title, doesn't it? So it's correctly assuming, but here correct has a particular meaning. Maybe that was the point you were making. I'm sorry, I'm not following you too closely. Is that the point you were making?
Yeah, I was just saying that.
Although it says it's a correct, the correctly reason, assuming consciousness, it's not a correct consciousness.
Yes.
Right. Okay, I'm with you. Okay. It's not a correct consciousness because it's not non-deceptive.
Yeah.
Because it's still deceptive.
Yeah.
That mind is a belief. It's not a knowledge consciousness. Yeah. Okay. Good. Keep going.
So something that is a thought consciousness but not a correct consciousness would be the correct assumption of selflessness of persons.
Good.
It is a thought consciousness because it gets at its object through a conceptual appearance, and it is not a correct consciousness because it is controvertible.
Yeah. Yes. So as we have seen in the previous weeks, correct assumptions may have all the pieces there. It could have it could be a correct assumption with a reason, but that reason is not ascertained yet. That you might have all the words, but you don't have you have a wise mouth still. You don't have a wise, what else would it be? A wise mind. Just the wise mouth. Okay?
Feeling that is a correct consciousness, but not a thought consciousness, be the first moment of a direct perception, direct sense perception of the color blue.
Okay, first moment of, what did you say?
Eye consciousness apprehending blue.
Visual consciousness apprehending blue. Okay. Go ahead.
It is a correct consciousness because it is a known incontrovertible knower, and it's not a thought consciousness because it is a sense consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Something that is neither a thought consciousness nor a correct consciousness would be a visual consciousness apprehending one moon is two.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a thought consciousness because it's a sense consciousness, and it's not a correct consciousness because it's a wrong consciousness.
Good. Okay. Good job. All right. Oh, any comments about that? Everybody okay with that? All right. Yeah? Yes, there was some back and forth about this, and originally I thought that correct assumption could be included in as a correct consciousness, but if you go back to what page was it? 225 is mostly about mistaken consciousnesses, but underneath that second definition, it's talking about wrong consciousness. It says this means that a wrong thought consciousness is wrong about what it is trying to get at. You see where I am on 225? If a thought is not wrong about what it is trying to get at, we may call it correct, right, accurate, factually concordant, and even a true consciousness. For a correct thought consciousness is able to realize validly and incontrovertibly its object of engagement, the actual object it's getting at. So we don't have a definition for correct consciousness, but we have a description here in the text. Number 12. All right, now we're getting into some longer descriptors. A consciousness mistaken with regard to their appearing objects and thoughts. Consciousness mistaken with regard to what was it? Thank you. Appearing object. And the other one is thought. Okay. All right, so let's be clear about what we're talking about, first of all. So what's included? What kind of instances are included under consciousnesses mistaken with regard to their appearing objects? Conceptual consciousnesses, wrong, non-conceptual wrong consciousnesses. Here, let's do that this way. Inference, which is a conceptual consciousness. That everything? Yeah, we could also list out correct assumptions. Doubt, we can add doubt. Uh-huh. Okay, and what's included under thoughts? So under conceptual consciousnesses, we could also go through all the conceptual consciousnesses again, couldn't we? Like inferential cognition. It's interesting to think about that as a thought, huh? A thought, but it's a conceptual consciousness, so it is a thought. You're thinking about the object. Yeah.
Is there any difference between a concept and a conceptual consciousness, or a thought and a thought consciousness?
It's worth thinking about.
Yeah. It's a thought, yeah.
It's a thought. He says no in the book. Can you find that? Okay. You want to look in mine? All right. So Venerable Lamsel says there's a source in the book that says there's no difference between the two, at least from this perspective. But it is interesting to think about, I think, like a concept. You have a concept of, to me, a concept is like a conceptual appearance, isn't it? Where a conceptual thought is the thought that's thinking about that conceptual appearance. But, okay. A little tarpa.
Okay, having this come up some years ago, there's one problem with the word concept, is that sometimes we use it for the subject and sometimes for the object. And that's where we get kind of messed up. Sometimes you're talking about
concept.
Consciousness.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes you're talking about...
I'm holding theory, a concept. You
know, yeah.
Yeah. Or so, I have a concept yeah, about...
So sometimes we have trouble with which one we're referring to.
Thought. Oh, is that true of thought as well? I'm holding a thought and... Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I think you have to decide how you're using it.
And
context.
Maybe in Tibetan, is there a difference between thought and thought consciousness? Or would it be getting at the same thing? There are a lot of plays on words in the Tibetan texts. So, okay. For now, let's say no. They're the same. Okay, so we'll say this is thought consciousness. Okay, so what was the guess? 4P? 3P? 3P was something that is neither. Okay, you want to do it, Em? All right.
The subject, A, correctly assuming consciousness, apprehending selflessness. Is both a consciousness mistaken with regard to its appearing object and a thought consciousness, or thought consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. The subject, A, correctly assuming consciousness, apprehending selflessness, is a consciousness mistaken with regard to its appearing object, because it is getting at its object through conceptual appearance. And the subject, A, correctly assuming consciousness, apprehending selflessness, is a thought consciousness because it is getting at its object through conceptual appearance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the subject, A, visual consciousness, apprehending one moon is two,
mm-hmm.
is a conceptual consciousness mistaken with regard to its appearing object, but not a thought consciousness. It is a consciousness mistaken with regard to its appearing object because it is a wrong consciousness,
mm-hmm.
and it is a thought. It is not a thought consciousness because it's never produced independence on its own uncommon and power condition, a physical sense faculty.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And
is there a shorter way you could have answered that?
A
because it's
non-conceptual wrong consciousness.
Because it's a sense consciousness.
Sense consciousness, yeah.
Yeah. Thought consciousness is necessarily mental consciousness.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So which way does the pervasion go? Sorry, just let her finish in the way. We should have done that first, but which way does the pervasion go?
So I think are they 4P instead?
Oh, you're saying there's 4P.
No, I'm changing my mind.
Okay.
There are 4P.
There are 4P.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. What is something that is a thought consciousness but not a consciousness mistaken with its appearing object? So.
I don't know. There is not one.
No, there isn't one.
3P.
3P. Are you sure?
Not entirely. I have a correct assumption. I have doubt tending towards the fact.
Okay. Well,
I have one.
What if you had? Okay, so you're now
right. You have the person is selfless. What would the syllogism be? The person is selfless because it is dependent on parts. Okay, something like right. Mm-hmm.
Because
it's produced by is a product of causes. But you haven't realized the. All three parts of the syllogism, mm-hmm. right? So you would not apprehend selflessness, would you? Okay.
Okay. So what would you say there? Perceive or what we're?
I don't know.
Thinking about.
Believing in the selflessness of persons.
Okay. Yeah, I take your point. Apprehend does not mean realize, as far as I understand. Apprehend, right? Apprehend just means you're engaging an object. Yeah.
So just referring to the definition, we're talking about correctly assuming consciousness. It doesn't know which superimpositions have been eliminated. So it doesn't know which one of those reasons work. But it is adhering more pointedly to the phenomenon, which is its principal object of engagement. So that's apprehending, isn't it?
It's a little tricky in the sutra school when we talk about selflessness because you get at selflessness indirectly or implicitly. And so maybe that's not the best. Or even something easier would probably just be to be safe.
Dependent or
no, something easier like a correct assumption about lunch or, you know. Correct assumption about non-virtuous states of mind.
It's a correct assumption that the person is selfless, right? But no reason, right?
Okay.
Then it's a correct assumption, right? I just believe the person is selfless, period. Yeah. Don't ask me why.
That's
a correct assumption.
I've just never heard a really clear explanation of all these different permutations when it comes to selflessness because of this. In the Sutra school following reasoning, they say that to realize a direct perceiver, which a yogic direct perceiver is, and that's what you use to realize selflessness, that has to engage an impermanent object. And so selflessness is permanent, and so it's engaging the aggregates devoid of a self, whatever that means. It's engaging the aggregates devoid of a self explicitly, and implicitly it's realizing selflessness, yeah.
I think my qualm is just linguistic.
No, I'm glad
the way we say correct assumption would be a correct assumption thinking the person is selfless. You wouldn't say apprehending selflessness, right?
Well, again, apprehending, maybe we have a stronger understanding of that word than is intended. Mm-hmm. Apprehending just means you're engaging. Apprehending, you're holding. Yeah, there we go. Visual consciousness apprehending one moon is two. One moon is two.
Okay.
You're apprehending that.
Then do you need to be more specific, like the selflessness of the cup, right? Or the self, a correct assumption.
Well, it wouldn't be cup, would it? It wouldn't be cup, not in this school. It'd be selflessness of person. Yeah. But selflessness and selflessness of person are synonymous for the school. So we can just say selflessness. Yeah. All these little details. Yeah. So there's 3P with this one. So we could find something that's neither like a yogic direct perceiver, implicitly realizing selflessness of person. Yeah. Because it includes non-conceptual wrong consciousnesses as well as thought consciousnesses. We didn't write that up. Oh, non-conceptual wrong consciousness. So this is the outlier. This is the difference between these two things. Thought consciousness does not include non-conceptual. So, okay. Next. Oh, I should have left that because I think the next one also has.
Also on page 217.
Yeah, thank you.
It says we take thought consciousness to mean the same thing as conceptual consciousness, or thought, or thinking consciousness.
Good memory. Thank you for that.
It doesn't say anything about concept being different from conceptual consciousness, but.
Mm-hmm. But at least we have a. Okay, good. Thank you for that. All right. 217. Okay, number 13, consciousness is mistaken with regard to their appearing objects. It's hard work, isn't it? And what was it? Valid? Reliable cognizer? Okay, what do you think? I hear a 3P, I hear a 4P. All right, let's go through. And consciousness mistaken with regard to their appearing objects include conceptual consciousnesses. What else? Non-conceptual wrong consciousnesses. Okay, but if we were to go a little further with this conceptual consciousnesses, we'd have inferential cognition, wouldn't we? As well as all the others, the other three. Or let's see, doubt and then wrong consciousness. Okay. And then if we talk about reliable cognizers, what do we find over here? Direct reliable cognizers and inferential reliable cognizers, just to be clear. Okay. So looks like it might let's test it. Okay, Tanya, what's something that's both?
What's something that is both?
A consciousness mistaken with regard to its appearing object and a reliable cognizer.
Inferential reliable cognizer?
Yeah. An inferential reliable cognizer apprehending, let's say, subtle impermanence. How about that? We haven't used that one tonight. Okay. And then something that is a consciousness mistaken with regard to its appearing object but not a reliable cognizer.
Non-consensual wrong consciousness.
Yeah.
Thinking I know something about this topic.
Well, you're getting there. It's a consciousness mistaken with regard to its appearing object because it's wrongly engaging its appearing object, like one moon is two, something like that. And it's not a reliable cognizer because it's a wrong consciousness. Yeah. Okay. And then something that's a reliable cognizer that's not a consciousness mistaken with regard to its appearing object. Good. Direct reliable cognizer. Okay. And it is a reliable cognizer because it's a direct reliable cognizer. It's new incontrovertible knower, a new non-deceptive knower. And it's not a consciousness mistaken with regard to its appearing object because it's correct with regard to its appearing object. The appearing object is what?
Said it's not mistaken with regard to its appearing object?
No, a direct reliable cognizer?
No, but there's reliable cognizers that are mistaken with regard to their appearing object. So does that...
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
So okay. It have to be get the non-mistaken knower free.
The direct reliable cognizer is a reliable cognizer because it is a new non-deceptive knower. It's not a consciousness mistaken with regard to its appearing object because it is correct in regard to its appearing object. Is that okay? All right. And then we could come up with something that's neither. So, the microphone.
Something formed.
Form anything. Okay, so I hope this was helpful to go through it like this. Sometimes it can feel a little bit tedious, but actually gets our minds going in the right direction. It causes us to review the definitions and to think about why we're saying the things that we're saying, and just stirs up the brain. Okay, so we'll finish there.